This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
And transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Belinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. And on tonight's show, the Houston Transgender Unity Banquet is coming up Saturday, May 2nd at the Sheraton Brook Hollow. That's on the North Loop West in Houston. Tickets are on sale now with proceeds supporting the Peggy Rudd Transgender Scholarship Fund. And Scott Turner Schofield, the Atlanta-based transgender performance artist, is this year's Unity Banquet keynote speaker. Other groups will also make presentations about their work, and we will have more details about that. At 9:30, we have news wrap from This Way Out, and then in our second hour, Pride Houston is looking for the best singers in Houston to strut their stuff during the open auditions at the third annual Houston Pride Idol competition. That's Sunday, May 3rd. It's part of the 31st annual Pride Houston festivities. Anyone with talent is encouraged to audition. Ernie Manous and Joey Guerrera will be here to discuss that. And we have our feature segments from This Way Out at 10:40. And hey, Queer Voices is now tweeting. That means that you can log on to twitter.com and see the titles of the music that we're playing and the names of the artists and also the names of the people that we have in the studio and hints about what's coming up next on the show. Go to queervoices.org and click on the Twitter link. And also check out our Facebook page, and there's a link on the queervoices.org website for that as well.
Well, so we're coming up to the annual Unity Banquet, and Rose, you're now chair?
Yes, I'm
now
chair.
How did you get yourself into that?
It's hard to say. You know, you show up and,
yes.
And you point around the room and go, well, who wants to do it now?
Yeah. You draw the large straw or the small straw, whatever. Rose Wall is with us, and she's involved in a number of community organizations, including the MCC Church, and you're also on the board of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus. And yes. You've been involved. And in what year is it this year?
It's the 17th annual.
17th year. Mm-hmm. Now, this is something unusual for Houston, isn't it? I mean, in other cities, do they have such a thing?
Most of the other cities don't have, you know, what you would call an umbrella unity steering committee, which is what HTOC, the Houston...
And what is a unity steering committee?
Right. What we do is we're made up of representatives of the local transgender support organizations and several members at large. And what we do is we try to pull together the events that all of us are doing and kind of bring us all together for some major events. Like, for instance, we have the Day of Remembrance in November. We'll typically be involved in Pride and in both the Pride Festival and the parade. And, you know, just various things that we are doing. And at the same time, we've started doing a scholarship, which was the Peggy Rudd scholarship you referred to earlier. And so all the proceeds and the profits and things that we have from the Unity Banquet, which is really our only major fundraiser of each year, to fund all these other events, money that's left over from that we put into our scholarship fund. And this year we've been able to expand it, and we'll be giving away two $1,000 scholarships to transgendered individuals.
Now, how many people usually go to this event? How many were about?
Typically it ranges from about 220 to about 240. We had set up for 232 last year, and we ended up having to set up two extra tables. So it's kind of like, you know, people all of a sudden at the last minute will go, oh my gosh, It's the unity banquet.
I can't imagine that happening in this community. I just can't imagine people waiting till the last minute. You know, there's the excuse if it's an outside event about the weather, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But the unity banquet, usually people dress up and they sort of have to plan a little bit for it. But you know, the transgendered community isn't quite as... Well, that's, I don't know if I could say this now, as organized as the GL community, but actually that may be false, because you've been doing this for 17 years, and and I've been to a couple of them. What I really like about it is there's a lot of non-T people there in support of the T community.
Right. A lot of our sponsors are, they're different individuals and corporations and things like that. And our sponsor mix has changed a little bit this year with the downturn of the economy. Some of our corporate sponsors aren't there, but a lot of the usual sponsors are there, as far as Phyllis Fry and some of the others, as well as some new sponsors coming on board.
Now, I understand when this first started, there was a little bit of concern of the hotel and the restroom facilities, but apparently everything's been worked out, and you've used this hotel before, and there's no problems.
Right. We have not really had a problem with this particular hotel. That was one reason why we switched from one hotel, and over the years we've kind of moved around, and we finally educated, you know, a hotel and everything.
So what happens at the dinner?
Well, we basically are going to give out a number of awards to individuals and organizations in the local community for what they've done over the past year, and there'll be someone who will receive a Lifetime Achievement Award. Intermixed with all this, we'll have some door prizes. There's a silent auction going on in the back where you can go back and bid on items, and they're also raising funds for the scholarship as well. And then we'll have a keynote speaker. Of course, there'll be a sit-down banquet, you know, with food, and there'll be a bar available in case you want to drink and mingle, and there'll be lots of people from the local community, politicians and various people will be there, so you can really kind of mingle and mix and meet some people who you don't normally meet.
And how many organizations are made up into the Unity Committee? About?
It's about, I would say it's in flux between 5 and 7 right now, and there have been, I know personally of 3 new support organizations that have started up in the last year. So, you know, organizations come and go, you know, like any support organization. A lot of times it's only as good as the people who are leading them, and if they get tired, they leave, it crumbles.
I can't imagine that happening.
No, that never happens.
Right, right. Well, let's bring on our guest, the feature speaker, Scott Turner Schofield. And Scott, are you with us?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit about what your presentation is going to be on.
I'm going to give a speech entitled, Why Transgender Folks Are America's Next Top Role Models.
Okay. Can you give us a little bit of synopsis of what, you know, not to spoil the dinner, but some of our guests may not be able to go there.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I'm a storyteller by nature, so I'm going to be telling a lot of stories. It's not a speech in the way that, you know, I have a point and I make it point by point. At the same time, I'm going to be telling stories about the very many ways in which, as a nationally touring speaker and performer, I've noticed transgender folks being the best Americans we want Americans to be. We bootstrap ourselves to success. We create community. We push frontiers. We're doing it in really incredible and heartwarming ways, and I'm going to tell some stories about that.
Have you been to Houston before?
I have, in fact. I was just in Houston. I was there over the weekend of February 20th. Diverse Works brought my one-man show, Becoming a Man in 127 Easy Steps. They were one of the commissioners of that show, actually. So I came, and we had a really good run with that, and that's where I got to meet the folks from the Unity Committee.
Great. Diverse Works is a wonderful place.
Yes, they are.
So let's talk a little bit about your, you know, can you give us one of the little stories of about your premise?
Well, I feel like I'd be telling too much if I did, but I could tell you another story.
Okay.
Okay, I'll tell you another story. I'll tell you about my 4-year-old friends, Royce and Elsbeth. I'm a babysitter often, and I'm like, you know, when you don't have kids, you're everybody's favorite uncle. So I'm babysitting for my 4-year-old friends, Royce and Elsbeth, and Royce has known me since I was Katie, the best girl babysitter ever. But his parents have explained to him, right? They say, you know, Katie is a man now, and he wants you to call him Turner. Do you have any questions? At which point, Royce says, no, actually, because we already have secret agent names for one another, and, you know, it totally makes sense that he's always really been a boy, kind of like how at the end of Scooby-Doo, you know, when he pulls off the mask, and so this makes all reasonable good sense, and we're in the middle of building a fort, and, you know, as you do with kids, and Royce turns to Elsbeth and says, Turner used to be a woman, but now he's a man, and then he asks me, he says, how did you do that? Okay, so here I am.
I want to hear this answer myself.
Right? I'm sitting there. Elsbeth looks horrified. She doesn't really know me. She's just here for dinner and a movie, right? But it's not the gender confusion that's bothering her. It's that at this point in her young life, she's been, you know, trained not to point, not to stare, not to ask prying questions. Meanwhile, I'm faced with the prospect of explaining gender identity and transsexualism to 4-year-olds. So I build the fort a little bit, and I say, well, Royce, you know, you really have to want it. I figure this is like an age-appropriate response, right? You do really have to want it. And Royce turns to me and says, but I really, really want to be a woman. Completely unselfconscious and totally sure, right? So I just be the parents that I want to see in the world, right? I just believe the child, respect the child, love the child, and then Elsbeth says, what's a woman? Now, I'm the last person in the world who should be having this conversation with these children. What's a man? What's a woman? I have no idea, clearly, right? All I want to do is build a fort, put them inside, tell them a ghost story that'll scare them into next week, not be having this conversation, right? But they're both staring at me so intensely, so I say, a woman, well, a woman can be anything, and anyone can be a woman, so long as she is smart and strong. And so that means both you, Royce, and you, Elsbeth, could each be women if that's what you chose, because you're both of those things. And you know what, Elsbeth? I think a lot of women would really like your shoes. She's got these flip-flops with a hot pink flower glued to the toe separator, right? And she beams at the compliment, at which point Royce says, what about my shoes? And he's got those sneakers that light up at the back, you know?
Yes.
And Royce, when I was a woman, I would have worn those shoes for sure. See, women, they're all different, and you can be any kind that you want. In fact, you can be any kind of person you want to be, whether you're a man or a woman or something different. And I say, let's think, what can you be? And they think on it for a minute, and then they overlap each other as they say, a baseball player, crane operator. And I say, fine, sure. So we finish the fort, and I put them inside, and I go to make dinner, and as I'm on my way out, I hear Elsbeth's muffled voice through the fabric, and she says, will you come in here and tell us a story? Will you tell us how you became a man? Shaping young minds.
Yes, that's a rather, yes, absolutely.
Well, 4 years is an appropriate time. That's about when I was aware that, oops, I'm different.
Exactly, me too, in fact. I thought this was just, it was amazing kind of coming back around to how things were for me, and to be able to have a response that was actually positive and not say, oh, no, you don't be silly, you know, but to say, like, yeah, let's make room for that, and you can be what you want to be.
Oh.
It was really gratifying for me to be able to say that, too, mm-hmm. And I totally had the respect of the parents, and, you know, I told them all about it later. They're like, that was the best response you could have had.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the worst thing that could happen is what happened to me is, well, little boys don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Little boys don't play with dolls.
Right.
That was before G.I. Joe.
Yes, and yes, and being a gay man, you've heard those same things, too, about, you know, those gender definitions. Scott, you travel around the country and you do mostly performance art?
Yeah.
And do you travel mostly in big cities and college towns, or do you ever sort of deal with a more hostile crowd?
You know, I travel to all kinds of cities and small towns, and I've never met a hostile crowd.
Really?
Yeah. Because it's about storytelling. You know, like I said, I'm not coming to give you a speech about how you should think and how you should be trans or all these other things. I'm just here to tell you stories. And when you say, can I tell you a story, it opens people's, there's just this part of your brain, maybe it's from childhood or something, you know, that just kind of opens up and says, yes, yes. That's much different from making a speech. And there's value in that, absolutely. It's very important. But what I do, I think, is different and brings me good responses.
Now, how long have you been doing this?
I have been touring since 2002, full-time since 2004.
Wow, that's a good time. What sort of cities have you ever gone overseas, or is this all in the United States?
Yeah, it's all in the United States. I haven't been able. I'm a total one man show. I book my own stuff and everything like that, and so just between visas and funding and all of that, I haven't figured quite how to make it across. But I'm open to it. Right now, I'm in the middle of booking a 10-city tour with the Becoming a Man show. That a really wonderful donation was given to me by the New Hampshire Charitable Coalition, Charitable Foundation, rather. And they gave me a good amount of money to be able to go to theaters that would not necessarily be able to take the risk of bringing a show by a transgender performance artist.
Yeah, right.
And kind of supplement part, like I get my travel and my artist fee is covered in that, so that then they can actually take the risk to bring the work. And so I've got 5 gigs listed so far. I'm working on a little more funding, but it's going really well. And I spend a week in each town doing a residency where I'll speak on panels and do workshops in high schools and colleges and just kind of create general awareness about the issues.
So do you work with transgendered organizations or artists, art organizations, or both, or is it a combination?
I work with all of the above. I work with primarily the theater. The theater has a good, you know, they have a base, and then I'll find whatever trans organization is in town, and if there isn't a trans organization, I'll work with the GLBT group. And I particularly, I find it really important to connect with youth groups, because so many gender variant youth are the ones who are really in need of attention and visibility right now. So I'll check in with the local homeless youth center or LGBT youth center and find out kind of whether I can be of use to them, you know.
Do you do many colleges?
Oh yeah. Colleges are my bread and butter. I'm actually I'm in Kansas right now, on my way to the University of Kansas, and I'll be performing there on Thursday.
What are the crowds like in colleges?
I love colleges because they are a place where your job is to be open-minded. And what I do when I go to colleges also is I do kind of a mini residency where I'll speak to different classes. So I'll be brought in by any number of departments, women's studies, LGBT studies, but also anthropology, psychology, all these different kinds of classes. So I get to come into contact with a really wide variety of the students, which always brings a very wide variety out to the show. I also do a particular workshop with the Greek, like, fraternity and sorority organizations.
Wow.
Because, you know, it's funny. People are always like, wow. And you're like, actually, it's a sex and gender segregated organization. They understand gender in the exact same ways as transgender people do. And all it is explaining that. And everybody's like, oh, okay, I got it.
Well, I just think that's fascinating because I was a frat rat, so, you know, and I'm going back. And as a matter of fact, my fraternity has accepted me as who I am. And
oh, I love it.
You know,
so
it's
great.
So cool. that they just changed the name on the books.
That's so wonderful. Congratulations. What fraternity?
Pi Kappa Phi.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, okay, you said colleges, but what about high schools? Have you been to some of them or in some organizations? I'd be curious as to see how receptive they were.
Yeah, I had a residency last January in Miami where I spoke only to high schools, and there was kind of a big hullabaloo because we offered the residency to five high schools and three accepted. One couldn't accept for some kind of administrative reason that was legitimate, but another one said no because he's trans. And it was great because then you get a newspaper story out of it and people actually start to think about their policies.
Yes.
And, you know. So that was really useful, but I tell you, the three ones that I did were just fantastic, and high school kids are so thirsty for this information. And you know, I'm not coming to say you should be trans or you know blah blah blah. I'm saying you have a gender too, and here's how gender works, and how do you feel about that, and what is your story? And just giving teenagers any opportunity to talk about their own stories can be so powerful. I love doing it for high schools, but it's also very difficult because, you know, in some parts of the world, you can't even say the word homosexual in a classroom, you know? I don't know if that's still true in Texas, is it?
Well, it depends on what part of Texas you're in.
Yeah, Texas definitely has its own problems, especially dealing with textbooks, because
right.
they're chosen statewide.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, teenagers are usually so mixed up anyway in dealing with their life and moving forward. I would imagine this is a really sort of good understanding of gender issues.
I mean, what I try to do is get people where they are. So, you know,
yes.
I can talk about queer theory and ontology and blah, 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 all these other words, but I wouldn't, you know, because that would alienate people. So just getting people, and it all starts with stories, you know. And to say to someone who's perhaps never considered that their gender even exists, sort of, when did you know you were a boy? When did you know you were a girl? In the same way that transgender people get asked that question all the time, it just leads to a level of self-reflection that teenagers need. You're right. They are mixed up. I'm saying we. I'm in my late 20s now. I still feel like a teenager. They are so mixed up, but only because there's not enough opportunity to sort it out in a constructive and affirming manner, you know?
Well, that always leaves a challenge because most, especially teenagers, they describe themselves as male and female because society said so when they were born. They looked between their legs and said, oh, this is what
mm-hmm.
you are. And they may not have even thought about gender in a real manner. So it's incredibly thought-provoking that you go, good show.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I'm always looking for more opportunities, so if you can find any, let me know.
Well, you're doing it right now.
I am, in fact. Yay. All right.
We want to know the story. I do. No, nobody else. I do. I want to hear it and the people out in the audience.
Okay, on what topic? I got a bunch of stories.
Oh, you just pick one. Whatever you're comfortable with right now. What's on your mind?
Okay. All right. I'll tell you. So, it's Texas. So the show that I'm here in Kansas to do is a show called Debutante Balls. And I attended three debutante balls as a teenager and in a dress. By the time of my third debutante ball, I was actually 21 years old. And at this point, I had come out already as a feminist and as a lesbian. And by this point, I was identifying as trans. And my friend who was the debutante, she called me. She begged with me to please support her through this process of coming out into high society as a debutante. And she said, but you know, Turner, I fully respect your trans identity, but everybody here is going to have known you since you were 17 years old and on the homecoming court. And my grandmother's on oxygen, so you can't wear a tux, okay? And so I say, okay, no problem. I can be queer as a $3 bill in a dress. But what kind of a dress does the feminist, transgender, pre- and perhaps never-operative transsexual performance artist I've become think to wear to make his debut into the silk-wallpapered walls of high society? See, the thing is, I only own one dress. It's it's got a black satin skirt boasting a leopard print bustier. But I will have you know that it is a Jessica McClintock, okay?
I got it.
Now, there are rich people in my life who would gladly shell out if they thought that Vera Wang was just the injection of femininity I needed to become a nice society girl. But this dress worked for the three balls before, right? So I figured third time's a charm. So I take my dress and my high heels, and I head to Greenville, South Carolina.
Oh, my.
Oh, yes. Now, to make a longer story shorter, I will tell you that I arrived in the five-star hotel hoping to find a gaggle of half-dressed girls fighting for mirror space and curling their hair, because these girls never mind helping out their illiterate to the ways of 17 magazine fellow ballgoers, right? You just explain that you're, you know, illiterate to the lexicon of liquid eyeliner and lipstick, and pretty soon you have dozens of finely manicured feminine hands touching you all over, right?
Well, that sounds wonderful. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Queer invisibility has privileges a straight boy would die for. So, but I go there, and the ladies have all gone to the salon, so I have to make myself look pretty. I am ill-equipped to do this, but I run out onto the Greenville, South Carolina street, and there on the corner I see a CVS. I am saved. And so I walk into the CVS, but the first thing I hear is, "Hey there, son, what can we do for you today?" And I think, oh, this is going to be a problem. So I make my way to the magazine rack where I comb every copy for tips and tricks, right? But Cosmo only wants to tell me about the best sex I'll ever have, not anything useful like how to apply liquid eyeliner or whether blue eyeshadow is still an 80s faux pas, you know. I call every feminine identified person on my iPhone, but today is the day no lipstick lesbian or transsexual will answer my call. Desperate times call for desperate measures. I approach the makeup counter. Betsy, a 79-year-old native South Carolinian, greets me with a smile. She looks me over and says, "Hey there, son, what can I do for you today?" And I think, oh, Betsy. Betsy, fate has brought us together. Will gender tear us apart? Ma'am, I need some makeup, I tell her, and she looks me over and says, "You do?" And I say, "Yes, ma'am, I do. you see, I'm actually a woman." "You are? You are."
I can clearly see that.
Clearly it's a long story, right? But I'm going to a debutante ball in a dress in about 3 hours. Can you help me? Betsy reaches under the glass countertop, and I swear she's hitting that emergency call the cops button, right? But no. She comes back with a white telephone, and over the loudspeaker of the CVS in Greenville, South Carolina, I hear, "Tracy, please come to the makeup counter. We have a situation." Now, these things I could not make up. I want you
no,
to know
you couldn't
purely
make
autobiographical,
that
okay? So I stand there until Tracy arrives.
You can go to a CVS in Atlanta and have that happen, too.
Precisely, yes. Indeed,
yes, it did, as a matter
yeah
of fact.
Uh-huh, I bet. See, it's every tranny story. Tracy arrives. Betsy fills her in. "This is a woman. Oh, my God, it is." "And she is going to a debutante ball in 3 hours in a dress." "Oh, my God, you are." Now, I begin having one of these out-of-body experiences so common to transgender people. I think, oh, my God, what kind of class warrior have I become? These women are clearly working well past retirement age, no doubt in order to fill emptying Social Security and Medicare coffers. And here I am, this queer, white, class-passing queer, asking them to help me go to a debutante ball. I return. Tracy is eyeing me. She looks me over for a good long moment and then smiles and says, "Well, what color's your dress now, baby girl?" I am so overwhelmed by the genuine warmth in her voice that I don't even hear myself say, "My dress? It's leopard print." Was that a good enough story for you?
Oh, that's great.
That's great.
I would applaud, but it would not go over the airways too well. That is excellent.
We're talking to Scott Turner Schofield, who will be the featured speaker at the Unity Banquet. And, Rose, tell us again the information about the Unity Banquet, what it is, and how you can get tickets.
Okay, the Unity Banquet this year is on May 2nd. It is a little bit different date than it's been in past years. And what you can do is you can go to our website at htuc.org. That's htuc.org. And all the information that you need will be there, including a link to purchase tickets. And
we can't mention the price, but it's cheaper if you buy the tickets beforehand.
Right.
But you can still show up and buy tickets at the door.
Yes, we will sell tickets at the door. There are discounts available for rooms and stuff, but I believe that all ends as of midnight tonight.
Yeah. The thing to remember is that it's a really good time for everyone. Everybody always says how great it is. And there's dancing after everything's finished. After we've given away all the awards and we've had our keynote speaker, it's a great time and a time to dance. Scott, want to thank you very much for being on the show tonight, and I look forward to see you on May 2nd.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to be there.
And Rose, thank you very much.
Can I put in one more plug?
Sure, go ahead.
Another thing that the Houston Transgender Unity Community does is that we're available to go and talk to organizations. We also go to college campuses and various things, and I and several other people speak at some of the college classes and things. As a matter of fact, someone else from our organization was speaking to a human sexuality class on one campus while I was speaking on another campus. So we try to get out there as best we can. If anyone, you know, wants us to come and talk, we'll go anywhere and talk.
Same website at htuc.org?
Yes, you can use the contact link there, and that will email directly to me.
All right. Thank you very much.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
I'm Donna Ann Ward.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 18, 2009. Jamaica's major LGBT civil rights group and an expatriate former leader are criticizing calls on both U.S. coasts for gay people to boycott the island nation and its products. A group in New York City, led by activist Wayne Besson, launched a boycott of Jamaica this week at the Stonewall Inn, birthplace of the modern-day LGBT rights movement. Jamaican-made Red Stripe beer and Meyer's rum were dumped into the sewer. A similar action was held in San Francisco, led by activist blogger Michael Petrelis and supervisor Bevan Duffy. The actions on each coast protested the high rate of violence against LGBT people in the Caribbean nation, fueled by several so-called dance hall singers whose music celebrates killing gays, and the government's failure to address the problem.
But in Kingston, the Jamaica Forum for Lesbians, All Sexuals, and Gays, or JFLAG, issued a statement this week asking why the U.S. activists had not consulted with them first. The group said that a boycott is not the most appropriate response at this time in our battle to win hearts and minds. The statement continued, "We do not wish to be perceived as taking food off the plate of those who are already impoverished. In fact, members of our own community could be disproportionately affected." Program manager Jason McFarlane, who signed the statement, called the boycott against Red Stripe beer in particular misguided. He said that the company that markets Red Stripe stopped sponsoring questionable music festivals last year and unequivocally distanced itself from the hostility and violence typical of Jamaican music towards members of the LGBT community.
Gareth Henry, a former JFLAG leader who fled to Canada in fear for his life, supported the idea of a boycott in his adopted country last year. But he said he decided against such an effort after hearing from colleagues on the island. He criticized Petrelis for using his since-recanted words in promoting the boycott, calling it outrageous and counterproductive. Petrelis told the Bay Area Reporter that he had reached out to Jamaican gays, but that the dialogue was very limited.
Consensual adult same-gender sexual activity is punishable by up to 7 years in prison under a Jamaican law dating back to British colonial rule. The current government has flatly refused to consider its repeal. JFLAG says that more than 30 gay men and at least two lesbians have been murdered on the island since 1997. In most of the cases, the killers have never been brought to trial. One man is currently serving a life sentence for the notoriously brutal murder of JFLAG leader Brian Williamson in 2004. Some global human rights groups have called Jamaica the most homophobic country in the world.
Iraq may be challenging that dubious title. As we reported last week, at least 25 young men and boys suspected of being gay have been brutally murdered during the past 2 months in Sadr City, the slum neighborhood of Baghdad. A BBC report this week puts that number at more than 60 since December. Some had the word pervert written on their chests. The killings are being attributed to death squads encouraged by anti-gay rhetoric of local Shiite religious leaders and honor killings by family members ashamed of the victim's perceived sexual orientation. Murders have also been reported in Basra, Najaf, and Karbala.
In what appears to be an escalation of organized anti-gay actions in the area, signs posted around Sadr City this week by a group calling itself the Brigades of the Righteous listed alleged homosexuals by name and threatened to kill them. According to a report by Agence France-Presse, the posters say, "We will punish you, perverts." Residents said that those named on the list have gone into hiding.
Amnesty International wrote to Iraqi President Nouri al-Maliki this week, demanding urgent and concerted action by his government to stop the wave of killings. The International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission sent a letter to the Iraqi Minister of Human Rights, Wijan Salim, asking her to take specific measures to protect lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Iraqis and prevent hate crimes against those perceived to be gay. The Iraqi government has thus far failed to respond to the appeals or take any visible action to combat the violence.
Elsewhere, the 13th annual National Day of Silence was observed by hundreds of thousands of students across the U.S. on April 17th. Young people from more than 6,000 middle schools, high schools, and colleges registered as participants this year. They refuse to speak, but hand out information explaining that they are in solidarity with LGBT people forced into silence because of bullying and other forms of anti-queer harassment on campus. It was sadly ironic that the date of this year's Day of Silence coincided with what would have been the 12th birthday of Massachusetts youngster Carl Walker Hoover. While he hadn't identified as gay, and it would be somewhat unusual for someone that young to do so, the sixth grader hanged himself last week after suffering months of homophobic abuse at school. According to GLSEN, the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, which sponsors the Day of Silence, it was at least the fourth suicide of a middle school-aged child linked to bullying. The parents of an Ohio high school student sued school officials earlier this month in connection with their bullied son's suicide. 17-year-old Eric Mohat came home from classes one day in March of 2007, put a gun to his head, and pulled the trigger. In a federal lawsuit, his parents alleged that he regularly was called gay, fag, queer, and homo, and that the school did nothing to stop the abuse.
GLSEN says that 9 out of 10 students perceived to be LGBT experience bullying on campus. More than a third reported missing at least one day of school in the previous month out of fear for their personal safety. Right-wing Christian groups, including the American Family Association, Concerned Women for America, and the Liberty Council, called on parents to keep their children out of school on the Day of Silence. In a joint statement, they said the implicit purpose of the event was to undermine the belief that homosexuality is immoral. But U.S. Secretary of Education Arne Duncan acknowledged the Day of Silence on the day of the event in a broader statement about student safety. Today, many Americans will honor the Day of Silence, called for on behalf of victims of harassment and bullying around issues of sexual orientation, including a recent suicide who would have turned 12 today. He wrote, "We must all acknowledge our collective role and responsibility in preventing student deaths and ensuring that our schools and universities remain safe havens of learning."
In other U.S. news, a bill to expand the rights of same-gender couples under an existing domestic partnership law in the state of Washington easily passed the House this week. It would give registered same-gender domestic partners all the state rights and benefits of married couples. The Senate approved the measure by a wide margin in March, and Democratic Governor Christine Gregoire has said she'll sign it into law. The bill expands on 2007 legislation to specifically reference domestic partnerships in all remaining areas of state law where marriages are mentioned, including labor, employment rights, pensions, and public employee benefits.
The Maryland General Assembly this week approved a measure that will exempt registered same-gender domestic partners who co-own a home from paying state inheritance tax when property changes hands. Current state law exempts spouses, children, parents, siblings, grandparents, stepchildren, or step-parents from paying state inheritance tax when property changes hands. All others pay a 10% tax on the property's value. The measure, which had already passed the Maryland Senate by a comfortable margin, adds domestic partners to the list of exemptions. Democratic Governor Martin O'Malley has said he intends to sign it.
But Nevada's Republican Governor Jim Gibbons has vowed to veto a domestic partnership measure that would grant some marriage-like rights to same-gender couples. A bill to do that was introduced this week in the Nevada legislature. Gibbons told the Las Vegas Review-Journal that, "I just don't believe in it." The bill's fate in the legislature is uncertain. Nevada voted for Barack Obama in the last presidential election, but the state remains mostly rural and conservative.
On the heels of marriage equality being established in Iowa by its Supreme Court and in Vermont by the state legislature, New York's Democratic Governor David Patterson introduced a marriage equality bill this week. It mirrors legislation that passed the Democrat-controlled state House in 2007, only to languish in the Senate, then controlled by the Republicans. But the November elections gave Democrats control of both legislative bodies. New Senate Majority Leader Malcolm Smith reaffirmed his support for the legislation, but said he wants to be sure there are enough votes to pass it before bringing the bill up for debate.
And finally, a new U.S. National Gay Republican group has been formed by defectors who think the Log Cabin Republicans, the country's original gay GOP group, has become too liberal. Among the founders of Go Proud, G-O-P-R-O-U-D, is former Log Cabin political director Christopher Barron. He told Politico.com that Log Cabin is basically indistinguishable from any other gay left organization. If your main issue is hate crimes or discrimination protections or marriage, you're probably not a Republican.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 18th, 2009. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Donna Ann Ward.
That was Rachel Romanowski from 2008, a CD single called Marry My Girlfriend. This is Queer Voices.
Well, I was just checking to see if we're still part of the United States.
Oh, have we seceded yet?
No, we haven't.
Oh my God,
Governor Goodhair.
And he went to A&M. He went to A&M too, and I'm just like, God. Making my school.
Probably they taught him we could secede there.
Well, we do have a lot of kind of conservative classes at A&M. They really kind of forge Aggies.
Do you know about A&M?
I was there for 4 or 5 years.
You were there 5 years on a 4-year course, huh?
Well, I co-opted as an engineer, so.
Oh, so 5 years, okay. Yeah. So you're an Aggie, too.
I'm an Aggie.
Did they really teach in a Texas history there that you could secede from the Union again still?
Well, I didn't take Texas history in college. I took just science stuff. But, gosh, Rick, making A&M look good there.
Well, he sort of made Texas look rather foolish since he's the supposed leader of
Well, at least he has good hair.
Oh, yes, and he has that pleasant smile. He looks so cute in that baseball cap.
You know, and he was a Yale leader, which is kind of like A&M's cheerleaders back in the day. So he wore like this little white.
Is he lighting the loafers?
I don't know.
He's not one of us.
Well, you know, there was a whole bunch of rumors that the national press was actually going after him a few years ago. But
the governor of Texas is a homosexual.
No,
don't say that.
Allegedly.
Don't say that,
No.
But he was a cheerleader.
A Yale leader.
Yeah, yes.
Which is like our masculine version of cheerleaders at A&M.
The masculine version of cheerleaders at my college were one of us. They were us.
Right.
They were part of our community.
Exactly. So what's going on, Jack?
I don't know. You have the calendar there.
Yeah, what's going on?
I do have one thing. Early voting starts next Monday for District H replacement. And there's a number, I think there's like 9 people running for that office.
Yes,
I saw 8
people.
There was an 8 for H forum coming up, like either tonight or tomorrow.
Yes.
So there's at least 8.
It's tomorrow.
Maybe it's 9 now.
Everybody jumped in. And those that don't win will run in the general election.
H is the northern, like, Heights and kind of all points north, I think.
Heights takes in Northwest Mall. As well as the Heights and that whole area.
Garden Oaks and all that stuff.
Yes.
Well, listeners, we have a couple of things that you should be aware of coming up in the community that you should maybe attend because they're good events and good fundraisers. The first one is Kindred Spirits is doing a charity golf tournament this Saturday starting at 1:30 at the Bear Creek Masters Golf Course. And for information, check out kindredspiritshouston.org. On Sunday, the day after that, they have the Une Soirée Palouse, which is a benefit for Assisters and Houston Buyers Club at Rich's starting at 4 p.m.
Yes, and we interviewed them here on our show several weeks ago.
Yes, and the theme is Alice in Wonderland.
Yes.
So I'm still trying to figure out what kind of costume, because, you know, they want you to dress up.
Alice. You can come as Alice.
I make a very ugly woman, I would think. And then next, a week from this Thursday on the 30th, Tuts is putting on their gay night out at Tuts for one of my favorite musicals, Rent.
Oh, really? When is this now?
This is Thursday, April 30th.
April 30th?
Yeah,
okay.
And the out at Tuts program is immediately after the program, after the play. And what they do is they get the cast come out and they have a piano and they play their piano and sometimes the stars come out. So we could actually maybe see Anthony Rapp.
Ooh, that would be wonderful.
And Adam Pascal.
So are there any tickets left or that...
I'm sure there are.
I guess go online to the theater at Tuts.
Tuts.org.
Yes.
And the gay night is Thursday, April 30th. And then on that same day, there is what's called Dining Out for Life, put on by AIDS Foundation Houston. Mm-hmm. And what you do is you go to a selected restaurant that's participating, and you dine there. And I think it's a certain percentage goes to AFH and Fighting AIDS.
Oh, that's wonderful. So that's good.
For a list of restaurants.
How would we find out which restaurants to go to?
Well, that's a great question, Jennifer. Website is diningoutforlife, all one word, .org. Diningoutforlife.org. And if you are privy to the Outsmart, it's on page 78 for some of the selected restaurants. And it's always fun because you get a group of people and you can go dine out and...
Oh, yeah. I remember doing it one other time, not for this one particularly, but it was for another charity, and going out, and it was sort of nice. You were enjoying yourself, having a nice meal, and knowing that, you know, when the bill came, that you're donating to a good cause in the process of enjoying yourself.
Absolutely. And so check out the website, diningoutforlife.org.
And when is that again?
That's also on Thursday. So you could have a whole night of it. Go dine out at a select restaurant, and then go to see Rent.
Oh, that would be perfect. Eat before the show at one of these restaurants, and then go see Rent.
That's like a perfect date night for me.
If dinner, I had a date.
Dinner, you do have a date, don't you?
Well, I have one for the Unity Banquet.
Very good.
I mean, yes, this is an announcement. Jennifer has a date.
Jennifer has a date. Let all the word go forth.
I can't complain anymore that I never have a date.
And that's what's going on in the community. And I think, you know, try to attend at least one of those events.
Well, and then Pride is coming up in like 2 months.
Yes. And we are working on some sort of quasi-fundraiser to be tied around Pride.
Yes, for our show.
Yes.
And aren't we, there's fundraising for KPFT coming up.
Coming up in May, and it's rather important because...
Please call.
You know, it's tough economic times for nonprofit organizations. And
that's what KPFT is.
Yes, absolutely.
In more ways than one.
Yes. Yes, of course, we're all volunteers on the show, but it does take some money to keep the station on the air. And, you know, that transmitter eats up a lot of power.
And so is it important that they call during our time slot to show that...
You can call any time you want. You can even call and suggest that, you know, that you're donating for Queer Voices or for After Hours at any time. You can donate online. But it'd be a lot of fun to have our friends call us during our time, which I believe is May 11th and 18th.
That's right.
And come and be part of this. I mean, don't want to start giving a pitch, but it's important that our community show their support for the two GLBT radio programs in the city, After Hours and our show, Queer Voices. There's only two, guys.
It's amazing that a city of 4 million plus people, there's only two radio programs.
Well,
we got to cover all the community.
Yeah. Well, and if we aren't supported,
there
by
is
you,
not a queer show on KPFA in San Francisco.
Shocker!
No, there isn't. And actually,
they should rebroadcast ours.
Yeah, last week Amy Goodman did a special on the 60th anniversary of Pacifica Radio.
Oh, really?
It was very good, and you can go online and probably download it. And it was just very interesting talking about the whole concept of community radio. And you know, when they first got the station in Berkeley was the first of the Pacifica stations to go on the air, and that was a whole different concept. I mean, this was 60 years ago, way before NPR. So the idea that people would donate to something they can get for free was a really, really bizarre concept. And it's sort of proven successful for the most part.
But you don't have to listen to commercials on our show.
That's true. Absolutely. And if you listen to commercial radio, boy, do you listen to commercials.
You listen to a lot of commercials.
A lot of commercials.
They advertise that they don't have as many commercials.
Yes, yes. And that, you know, just like Channel 2 is saying, we want feedback on how to do the news. Well, why don't you just do the news?
Yeah. Try news. That
yes.
works. But, you know, please, take a moment when you have a chance coming up. Support the two GLBT programs on the radio in the city of Houston. That's After Hours and us, Queer Voices, when you call in and donate. Whether you've donated for any reason, take a moment when you do and say Queer Voices or After Hours or both of us.
Because we want our program to shine. We want it to continue and be the gay voice of Houston.
We're ever so gay.
Well, we do put the queer in Queer Voices, I would think.
Oh, that's a commercial right there.
No, it's a soundbite.
That's a soundbite?
Right.
Okay. No, you had the list there, mm-hmm. and why don't you run by them one more time the dates real quickly. So people, if you heard it a little earlier, it'd give you a chance to jot these things
down. Okay, these are the cool things to do in the coming week. The Kindred Spirits Charity Golf Tournament this Saturday at 1:30, Bear Creek Masters Golf Course. And then then Sunday is the Un Soiree Palouse, which is a fundraiser Alice in Wonderland themed fundraiser at Rich's starting at 4 p.m. on Sunday. And then on Thursday is date night, where we have the Dining Out for Life at a specified restaurant at diningoutforlife.org, and then going to Tut's for the gay night out at Tut's for rent.
Absolutely. And coming up in May, the latter part of May, not only is it the Houston Transgender Unity Banquet, but also the HRC Gala. And next week, we'll have, in the 9 o'clock hour, we'll have Megan Stabler, as well as two other co-chairs, or tri-chairs, of the banquet here to talk about it and tell you more about it.
I'm so excited for Christine Baranski.
Oh, yes.
The guest speaker.
Oh, gosh.
I love her.
I mean, it's worth it. Talk about fun! This is the fundraiser of all fundraisers for our community, and you need to get out and take part.
Yes.
Support it.
Yeah.
You're supporting all of us, and have a good time for the evening.
And get a chance to dress up.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And you're listening to Queer Voices, and I think we have a piece of music next.
Yes, we certainly do.
This one, he's special. He'll take his time and do his best to fit in here. And I can't help but wonder, was he made for something more than this? Was he made for something more than this old world and this old life? Takes to fit in here. So keep close, stand by, watch those around him. They'll change his mind about the way to fit in here. And I can feel and wonder, was he made for something more than this? Was he
Putnam from his 2008 CD Casualties and a track called More Than This. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Well, Pride is just around
the
corner.
Who are you?
Well, I am Brian Lemieka.
I'm Jennifer Renee.
I'm Jennifer Renee. And I was saying that Pride is just around the corner, and this year we're having the third annual Pride
I'm
Idol.
I'm proud every day.
You're just a one-woman Pride parade. Pride Idol is coming up, and in the studio tonight we have local celebrity Ernie Manous from Channel 8, who is a judge.
Yes.
And then Joy, is it Guerra?
Guerra, yeah.
I'm trying to do the Hispanic pronunciation.
You got it. That was perfect.
And you're a feature writer for the Chronicle?
I'm the music critic for the Chronicle.
Yes. I read your article all the time.
Yeah?
Yes.
And your Pride and your Idol blog.
My Idol blog.
Everyone reads your Idol blog.
So, Idol this year, what's going to be different? Well, how are we going to tweak it this year, make it extra fabulous?
We're talking about Pride Idol?
Yes.
We're going to make it extra fabulous by just going bigger and bolder and better. We're doing a much bigger audition process this year, which is going to involve the judges for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
We're opening the auditions up to the public so they can come and watch and cheer for their favorite contestant or boo somebody they don't like, which hopefully will happen. But or boo Ernie, which usually happens during the actual competition.
Well, they'll do that behind his
back. No, they do it right up.
No, they do it in front of his face.
I've been threatened.
He's our Simon Cowell.
Oh, are you going to videotape it and then sell the outtakes?
Oh, I wish. That's a good idea for
play them
the CD outtakes. Come on.
Play them during breaks in the competition. There you go.
Now, we thought actually we would video record them and show them at the different bars in town. So any of the bars that want them, let us know, and then you can put them up and promote the event.
Yeah.
Because it all goes for Pride in the end.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what's important.
Right.
So when does this whole process start?
The auditions are May 3rd, which is a Sunday from noon to 5 at Warehouse Live. It's a free event. They're going to have drink specials, lots of other cool stuff. And we're going to whittle them down from there into our final contestants, which move on to the semifinals at Guava Lamp.
So just all people come that on that Sunday to Warehouse Live, and then you just kind of go through the whole process.
12 to 5, you come, you sing a cappella. The judges will sit there. If you get two yeses, there will be a total of four of us. There'll be three judges and our producer of the event. And
that was air quotes.
Yeah, air quotes for me. Quotes. The producer.
They couldn't see that out there.
Well,
you're using
my inflection,
TV.
Though.
He's a visual media person.
I know.
So.
Yeah.
And the producer of the event. See, that's my air quotes for you without vision. So you'll get to be part of that event and watch it. If you get the two votes of yes, then you stick around and you get to come back in the second round. And when that's over, we will put together our finalists all in one day on May 3rd. But as Joey said, it'll be open to the public. You can come in, you can watch. Think of it like America's Got Talent, where the audience can watch the audition process happen.
So is this outside the GLBT community?
This is open to all people.
All
because
people.
Pride is about all people being proud of who they are.
Very good.
And we cannot be proud of who we are if we then limit others to who they are.
Exactly.
Ooh.
Maybe we can
I like that.
Thank you.
That is good.
I've been hosting the parade for 1,000 years.
That is so good.
I've learned the walk around this one.
Exactly.
Maybe we can get the big X's like they have on America's Got Talent. There you go.
And we don't have to listen to them sing the whole
way
through. Oh, we keep getting questions from people. And one that we keep getting is, you know, do I sing to track? Will there be a piano? It is a cappella.
A cappella.
We are here to hear your voices. I mean, I guess someone has a guitar or something. That's fine. But we don't want you taking time setting up and all
right,
that.
Right. Just keep it really simple. You know, sing something that you're familiar with. I think one of the best things is for people to sing something that they know everybody else will also be familiar with.
That's kind of scary, though, because then you're trying to sing a very well-known song. And
I think it's important they sing something that they sing well.
Exactly. Right.
Because you'd be amazed.
That's ideal. Yeah.
Well, they'll come and do something really complicated that they don't do well, and then they'll be like, well, why didn't you pick me? I'm a great singer. It's like, well, you didn't sing great.
Right.
I mean, it's that simple.
So say you win this competition. What are some of the spoils and some of the...
Joey's good. He's got them all memorized.
What are the rewards? What are some being of the, great?
The carrots.
The winner of the competition gets... the big prize, at least to me, is they get $1,000 worth of recording studio time, which includes a two-song demo, and that's at Urbana Studios, which is a Grammy-winning studio here in town.
And the big prize to me is the 7-day Caribbean cruise. That is the Halloween cruise, goes out of Galveston, so the winner gets to go on that.
Oh.
Yeah. Big stuff.
Alone? Do they perform?
Well,
do they get
it's a whole cruise ship. They're not going to be alone. We are waiting to hear the final word on is that them and a guest or just them. They will also probably, we're working on, be performing a evening on the show, an evening on the show, so they get to do a, or on the ship, so they can do a show of their music, too.
They will also definitely perform at the Pride Festival and be a part of the Pride Parade, so they'll get that type of exposure as well.
And so much more. And they can read all of that stuff over on the website at Pride Idol.
And a guest spot on American Idol?
Yeah, I wish.
And we do actually have another judge, too. So.
Yes, there are three judges. We do have our Paula.
Who is the Paula?
Oh, yeah, who's Paula?
I'll let
I thought you were the
Paula.
No, I'm the Simon.
He's the Simon.
Simon. Oh, yeah.
But I'm not,
I know.
I'm not the Randy, so...
No, we kind of split up Simon a bit, and nobody wants to be Randy. See, because I could be really mean, they say. I don't think I am. I think just
no.
Honest.
Oh, no. Just no.
Our female in the middle, the rose between these two thorns, is Vanessa Riley from Project
Vanessa
Runway.
Vanessa Riley.
Yes.
From Project Runway.
She is fabulous. She's
I
more
love
like
her.
A Sharon Osbourne than
I
she is.
I love
like,
her.
Well, she's going to be our...
I've never met her. I just love her from TV. Just
well,
love her.
If you loved her on TV, you will fall madly in love with her in real life.
I think I will.
We'll also probably have some guest judges along the way. I think we're going to have Katie Malloy, who was actually an American Idol finalist last season. So she's going to perform and probably guest judge 1 week as well.
And Will McCarr also
right.
is going to come and join us, another American Idol guy. So it's going to be a very fun contest. But the important thing that I keep stressing to everybody is that all these prizes we've mentioned and all that we didn't, somebody's going to win them, and
right.
it's going to be one of the people that shows up on May 3rd.
It could be you.
I know for one thing it can't be either of us.
Right.
But it could be one of you. It could be. It has to be somebody else, and it has to be someone there that's May 3rd. So if there's a small turnout, and you go, and you're an okay singer, and everybody else is terrible, you could be the winner.
Right.
You know, I mean, honestly.
You have a set number of finalists, you said?
We have decided, if I'm sure of this, it's we want to take a look at the talent pool that's out there.
Right.
We know there will be at least 6 finalists that day. I would like to see a list of 12 really good singers
yeah.
move into the finals.
I would love to see 12 as well.
Because then we have so many weeks until the actual parade and Pride Day, so we've got to whittle them down.
And how does it work at Guavalimp? You have your finalists, and they compete head-to-head? Or how?
Yeah, they all perform one song once a week on a Thursday. It starts at like 10 o'clock, and then by a combination of judges' scores and text messaging from the crowd, that's how we determine who gets eliminated.
So, like, if you're going to be a singer, a contestant, and you bring a bunch of your friends, and they all text for you, you've got a much better chance of winning.
Right, right.
Which I don't like, because I think it should be solely
kind of,
my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Seems like there could be some tinkering or some
right.
shenanigans.
There could
with
be
the
some Sanjaya-isms.
You'd think
there.
It was the November election
well,
here
we kind
in
of,
Harris County.
We right. kind of weigh it out that each of the judges is a fourth of the score, and the fourth is the audience.
Right.
So they're like a fourth judge.
I see.
In our panel. So it can't really totally skew it, but I think it did change the results week to week
mm-hmm.
last time.
It did, yeah.
So they're going to be performing, the audition is on the 3rd.
Live audition, May 3rd,
live audition,
5,
and then you get your 6 to 12 finalists,
mm-hmm.
and then they perform every Thursday.
Starting the 21st.
May 21st, yeah. starting 21st. Every Thursday.
Every Thursday, so until...
June 25th.
25th,
yep. And that's when we will announce, we will crown our new idol.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So they get an opportunity to really show their talent is very much like Idol.
Yes, it's styled
great.
Exactly like that, yeah.
Definitely.
That is great.
But the big thing to remember, it's May 3rd at Warehouse Live.
Where is Warehouse Live?
It's downtown.
It's on St. Emmanuel.
Yeah.
It's kind of on that warehouse district on the other side of the George R. Brown Convention Center.
Exactly.
813 St. Emmanuel.
I know it well because that's where we had Jungle this year. So
it
that's
is.
That's right.
Yes, so, you went yeah. to Jungle. See what it's like in somewhat daylight.
Right.
Come back and enjoy
it's it. Like I want to say it's St. Emmanuel and Polk. Don't quote me on that, but it's kind of in that general area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want a sampling of what the judges are like, I guess down in Galveston for Galveston Wet, which is happening this coming weekend.
Oh, yeah.
On Friday night at the Pink Dolphin.
Right.
They are doing a wet idol, where it's going to be a singing contest with the carrier. But the Pride Idol judges, Joey, myself, and possibly Vanessa, are going to appear and are going to judge these people, too. Unsuspecting to them. Unsuspecting.
So could this be like a...
Unsuspecting.
This is a warm-up.
If they're listening tonight, it won't be unexpected.
Oh, well, then they have a leg up on everyone else. And I hear
so is this like a feeder competition for the Houston Pride Idol?
This is a totally separate competition, but they invited the judges to come down and judge that night.
And we very... Well, may, like, I think what you're saying is find some contestants that can come.
Yeah, come.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, if you go to the website,
yes.
Pride Idol.
HoustonPrideIdol.com.
Thank you. And you fill out your application online, or you run into Joey or myself or Vanessa out at a bar handing out our little blue cards. On May 3rd, you don't have to wait in the line with all the other people. You get to jump right to the front of the line and come and audition as soon as you show up.
VIP treatment.
Right. But you got to sign up online.
Yes. Yeah, very important for them to sign up online tonight.
That's right. We have the Houston Pride Idol website. We're also on Twitter and MySpace, so we're all over the place.
What about Facebook?
Facebook,
oh,
yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yes.
Everybody, you got to be on Facebook.
We are on Facebook.
Yes.
Do we actually have a Houston Pride Idol Facebook?
It's in the works.
I love that. It's coming.
Oh, my gosh.
Soon.
Coming
to you soon.
Okay, so tell us again, the open Sunday audition is coming up on May 3rd, yeah?
May 3rd.
Noon to 5, May 3rd.
Warehouse Live.
What sort of talent do you need? I mean, is it just strictly voice?
Right.
Strictly voice
talent contest. You come, you sing. Over the last 3 years, because Joey and I have had the pleasure of judging all 3 years so far, we have had a wide variety of the styles of music people sing. This year we will have theme nights as we move through it and all of that. But I wouldn't worry about it. If you can carry a tune, if you are a singer, if it's your passion, no matter what style you sing, come out to these auditions. Because also what we see strength in our competitors, that'll probably guide what we pick for the theme nights anyway.
Right.
So we want you to come out. We want you to participate. We want someone to win these great prizes, but we want it to be a good contestant that wins them. And so it's there. Somebody's going to take all of this home. And it's quite a few $1,000s worth of prizes we're giving away.
But not only that, it's the visibility and kind of getting your name out there.
It jumpstarts a career. It can get you going. We've had wonderful winners in the past, and we see them performing all over town.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great competition. It's a lot of fun if you can weather my critiques.
Simon critiques.
Well, to change the subject just briefly, something you said earlier.
Yes.
What about American Idol?
What about it?
What about it? What
tell us, Joey.
Tell us, Joey, what you think.
Well, in my ideal idol world, and I think this is pretty realistic, I think it's going to be Adam and Allison, I'm hoping, at the very bottom.
Adam,
at the very
end. Adam is the real cute one. Is that the one?
No, that's going to call him what we call him as a nickname. No, you're thinking of a different one. Adam is the dark-haired guy with the nail polish.
I don't watch it.
Oh, then
I'm not in that cult.
You're not in that cult?
No.
You need to come over to our side.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, I don't.
Well, there was a lot of blogging going on about the contestant who may or may not be gay.
Yes, that's him.
The one who kisses a lot of boys?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
The same boy over and over again.
That whether or not he could actually win Idol.
Right.
Whether America would actually vote for him to be the winner. What is your opinion? I know what mine is.
I honestly think if he doesn't win, he's going to be the runner-up. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen at the end, but I think, at least from where I'm standing, he's picked up a lot of momentum, whereas the other guy I think that was a front-runner in the beginning, Danny Gokey, has sort of petered out a little bit. They're like complete opposites, whereas one's, you know, androgynous and sexy in terms of performance. The other guy's very safe and standard and karaoke. Yeah.
And I did read a report somewhere that said that Adam is not carrying what they call the Walmart crowd. The middle America,
right,
mainstream voting crowd, the little girls aren't jumping on his bandwagon. You watch
what about
the
little boys?
Well, somebody's jumping on his bandwagon, that's for sure. You look at them perform, and Adam actually is just a seasoned performer.
Right.
He's head and shoulders above everybody else.
Right.
The others are in an amateur contest, and he's just on there giving us a showcase performance each week. will America vote that way? I've seen really weird things happen in American Idol.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And even if he doesn't win, I don't think you necessarily, at this point we've learned, you don't have to win to be successful.
Right, his career is...
Right, right.
So he's set for his career. I mean, for this, just the conversation we're having...
Exactly.
Is the kind of conversation that gets your name out there, people talk about you, people are going to give him jobs.
Right.
Oh, so
yeah,
that's important.
He's set.
Well, even the runners-up in American Idol do very well.
Right, right.
As they do at Pride Idol. So even a runner-up at Pride Idol.
Oh, that was a master segue.
Do you like that?
Wasn't it?
So don't forget, May 3rd. It's going to be...
May 3rd.
The bar is going to be open and selling drinks. There's going to be drink specials. So even if you don't sing, if you're an American Idol viewer and watcher and you enjoy that kind of a program... Come on down to Warehouse Live Sunday afternoon. What else are you going to do? It's a Sunday afternoon. Come join us. Watch the competition unfold. And maybe that'll inspire you while you're there to sign up.
And we may find our own Adam Lambert, right?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Or you might find someone, too. You being the listener out there.
That's right. Y'all need to come and be part of it. And if you believe you have the kind of talent necessary to compete and win... Then what you need to do is go to the website.
HoustonPrideIdol.com.
Go in and fill out the application, and when you come on the 3rd, you go right to the front of the line. You don't have to wait with everybody else. You're headed there. Well, you'll be up there with everybody else who filed online.
I don't know exactly how we rush them.
Yeah, those who just show up at the moment and are in the crowd and decide they want to sing. You will be last. The other ones won't be.
But don't let that discourage you. If at the last minute, it's Sunday afternoon, you're sitting there, you've just had your omelet, there's nothing on TV, and you think, what could I be doing with... I'm going to go audition. You come on down. We will welcome you with open arms.
You're there in your house singing and doing show tunes.
There you go.
You decide, I'm going to go down there.
And all I can say is I have been out to a number of bars in this town where they're having karaoke night. And there is a large number of people in this city who love to sing.
Oh.
And so many of them are really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what also you get is if you're good or you're even... okay singer, your judges are going to critique you along the way. And we've got some people in this contest that really know what they're talking about. Joey, for example, really will give them some seasoned advice. So it's like getting a master class in singing, too. So if it's something you've enjoyed and you can carry a tune but you've never hit your potential, give it a shot. Come on down. You could learn. You could be a better singer. You could win a cruise. You could win a demo. I mean, it's really hard.
Give us the information again.
It's HoustonPrideIdol.com. The auditions are from noon to 5, May 3rd at Warehouse Live, 813 St. Emmanuel. If you see myself or Ernie out and about, talk to us about it if you have questions. Also, another thing I sort of wanted to say was there's tons of bands in town that I think have really great singers, and I would encourage them as well to apply because I think a lot of times they think, oh, I'm in a band, I sing for a living, it's not fair or whatever, but of course it's fair. I mean, you're a struggling singer just like everyone else. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, people that have made it far in the competition have sung professionally in churches, have been paid to sing in bands, have fronted groups. That's perfectly fine with our competition.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a record deal, probably not. But what? You're probably not listening to us right now.
Right.
That's right.
Well, I would think that maybe listening on doing an iPod or something.
That's right. Yeah. We'll want to thank y'all both for coming.
Thank you.
This is Brian Levinka.
I'm Jennifer Renee.
Thank you.
This is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Time. big shot, I commend you, little boy in blue. Sexiness grounded for your two. Over gray mountains, down and through. They don't understand.
Eric Hyman and a song called Little Boy Blue from his 2008 CD Resonate. And that was actually inspired by a transgendered teen that he met. This is Queer Voices.
Well, we have a really interesting show coming up. Why don't you all introduce yourselves?
Hey, I'm Chris Rivera.
Hi, I'm Heaven Stevens.
And Betsy Brown.
And what's the name of the show you're doing?
Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Now, why did you decide to do that?
The VIP members of Unhinged Productions, which is a local GLBT theater company, chose to do this musical. And we just gave them a few titles, and they chose Hedwig, hands down.
Now, is that a rather difficult play to do? I mean, because there's a lot going on in that play.
Yes and no. Okay. The great thing about it is a really challenging play. It is kind of a one-man show with a lot of assistance from a second actress. It's a rock musical, but at the same time, it's got this deliciousness of the play takes place wherever you're doing it. It takes place in a dive, hole-in-the-wall little place, and it's minimal set. A lot of things are minimal, but it is a challenging play. So it's
extremely challenging.
Yeah,
I like the scene in the movie where it's in a trailer and the whole front comes down.
I love that. The play is a little different. If you've seen the movie,
sure, it has to be different.
If you've seen the movie, you know throughout the movie Hedwig is playing at these little dives. Well, the whole play takes place as if at one of those shows. Hedwig's telling all the stories you see in flashbacks and singing all the songs, and you are part of the audience at that show.
And so somewhat clueless, I guess, or I guess, or I don't know, maybe not.
Oh, well, that's our job to help you out. But it's really exciting, high energy stuff. A lot of like comedic stand up style monologues, and then the songs are just brilliant.
I also love the scene where she's singing in a salad bar, or there's so many good things. I haven't seen the movie in a couple years. I mean, it all just sort of flashes back because it's so bizarre and interesting.
So, Chris, you're playing the role of Hedwig?
That's right.
I see. Do you have like the little blonde kind of cutout?
Well, absolutely. I've met with the people doing wigs. Bryce, Patrick, and Sunny are brilliant. They've created four beautiful wigs. And yes, we are doing the classic Hedwig.
The feather.
We're doing a punk rock, and some other looks that are going to be fantastic too.
Now, when does this all start?
Well, we have a big launch party.
We have a huge launch party at the Meridian to kick it off on the 30th of this month.
Okay.
And what we're doing is we're celebrating Hedwig Styles, which is glam rock, punk rock, drag queen. And we have a runway fashion show to do that. We have just like a lot of...
Live DJing.
Like a couple DJs. We have a silent auction. Just really,
it's
we're looking
really
to have a really good time.
Yeah.
And that's the 30th?
The 30th.
What time?
7:30.
7:30.
And the show itself is, the opening night is May the 8th.
And where's the theater?
The theater is on Navigation Boulevard.
5102 Navigation.
Yeah, 5102 Navigation Boulevard. So east downtown.
In relation to Nymphas, where is that?
Right next door.
That's the only thing
it's
I know.
Just a little bit that.
Yeah, it's just
down the
up the road. That's it's the up the road from the original Nymphas.
I love, yeah. You say Navigation, I think, okay, Nymphas.
Yeah, it's right at the corner of
you're not
Navigation
alone.
And Adams.
Okay.
Right there.
That's the only reason I go over there is for Nymphas. And so.
Well, good. You can have Nymphas before and afterwards.
Exactly.
How big is your theater?
The stage is quite large. It seats, I think, 180 people.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a beautiful theater. The artistic directors have been converting it from a warehouse for almost 4 years, and they've done a wonderful job. Like, lovely. I'm new to Houston, and I've worked in theaters in Europe for many, many years, and I love the space.
What do you think of our Houston theater scene here?
I'm just getting to know it, but the art scene and the theater scene is really exciting. I've gotten to know a lot of artists of all different mediums and different media types, and people are really generous, very intelligent, very creative, very willing to go the extra mile. So it's been a good time for me.
Now tell us about Unhinged Productions.
Unhinged Productions has been around for 10 years, and we're a GLBT voice. We're anti-discrimination. We like diversity. We're the premier GLBT company here in Houston, and we always lend an ear or voice to the GLBT community.
And so what type of plays have you been putting on?
Our last play was called In Flight, and it was Five Flights.
And that was a dramedy. A lot of comedies. Nikki Silver is one of the favorite playwrights that they've done for the past few years. Best Actress was won a few years ago by Anne James when she did Laughing Wild by Christopher Durang. A lot of comedies because people like that, but a lot of great dramas too. And then, of course, I think the dark comedy is what Unhinged really loves.
So musical is a little bit different for you all then?
Yeah, I'm new to Unhinged, but it seems to be slightly different. And I'd like to see it go in that direction, mm-hmm. where lighter work, you know, just kind of more comedy, more, uplifting, entertaining,
so
wild. Yeah.
HIV AIDS.
Yeah.
Well, Unhinged has done a lot of dark comedies where it's really funny, but there's a lot of serious issues going on too. House of Yes. And again, Nikki Silver's plays are also go dark, but they're hilariously funny as well.
And what type of community reaction have you gotten?
About Hedwig?
About Unhinged Productions in general.
Well, again, like, Betsy's just joined this year. I was on the board 4 years ago, and that's only half of the lifespan of Unhinged Productions. But great. Like I said, a Best Actress Award has been presented to Unhinged by the Houston Press. A lot of great reviews. Different shows. I mean, different shows are hit and miss. But as a Houston theater company, Unhinged is a pretty fairly respected small theater. They've always been able to turn out pretty great work.
Yeah, that's whenever I mention Unhinged, most people know of us and have seen shows and have enjoyed them.
Great. Were you going to do a song for us?
Well, I mean,
Oh,
here's the spot.
Well, we couldn't. We couldn't fit the band in here. I know the audience can't
see the band.
But we can talk a little bit about the music. It's mostly a rock musical, like we said.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But wonderfully for Texas, there's one country-esque song,
rockabilly.
Yeah. Mm. Called Sugar Daddy, and that's a fun one. Just to give you a taste of it, like we don't have the band, but
sure.
I've got a sweet tooth, but licorice drops and jelly rolls. Hey, sugar daddy, Hansel needs some sugar in his bowl. I lay out fine linens and polish up the chrome. And if you got some sugar for me, sugar daddy, bring it home.
Fabulous.
And your favorite's Wiggenbox, though, right?
Yes, where the trailer.
Well, we're not doing that, so don't disappoint the audience.
We'll have to go to the show.
Sing the song. Can you sing parts of that?
Well, yeah, we'll do a part of that.
Some girls, they got a natural ease. They wear it any way they please. With their French tip curls and perfumed magazines. Wear it up, let it down. This is the best wig that I've found. To be the best you've ever seen, I put on some makeup, turn on the 8-track, and put the wig back on my head. Suddenly I'm Miss Farrah Fawcett from TV until I wake up and I turn back to myself.
We're clapping.
That's
hard to clap on the air, but
again, we're gonna have a band. It's gonna be more fabulous than if you can believe that.
Well, it's such a fun show. I mean, strange but fun.
Yeah. You know, I love John Cameron Mitchell. His work. I don't know if you saw his short bus.
Yeah,
that was great.
I've heard about it.
It's really
intense for sure.
I love them. I love the lyricist Stephen Trask and the author. I mean, they're amazing.
I'm gonna have to watch the movie now. I'm gonna have to go find it
and the play. You're gonna have to watch the play.
Of course. Oh my god. I totally support theater in Houston, and especially gay theater.
Yeah. Cool. So,
well, I think you'll really love this one. It's turning out.
Now, are you gonna be in your full Hedwig?
Okay. Well, of course, costume. I really felt like when you do a show like this, it's iconic, and so many people have seen the movie. So many people who will see the show have seen the movie. So it's a fine line between you want to honor some things from the production and do make it your own. And I felt like the look of Hedwig was very important. A lot of productions try to copy the original costumes, which is one specific denim outfit and one specific black outfit, but giving tributes to that, and there's a little piece of denim, and the second one is black. that's all that's similar. I really want to do something different, and really, even from the look of Hedwig, make Hedwig my own, and a little rougher and a little less. I mean, there's plenty of camp, there's plenty of fun. It's outrageous, but also there's an intensity and a ferociousness, and someone who's been deeply wounded as well.
Yeah, but also somebody who recovers from that wound. I mean, that's what I think is so amazing about...
So uplifting.
About the play in itself is that, you know, when you say you start off and it's this bizarre character, and by the end of the play, it's like, oh, wait, that's me. I've been there. I've been hurt, and I've been
ripped up. Yeah, it speaks to everyone.
It speaks to everyone in that level, and it's so amazing, you know?
I love the end of the description on the back of the script. It says, it's inspiring for anyone who's ever felt like life gave them an inch when they deserved a mile.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So what else is coming up in the season?
That's yet to be announced.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's the end of this season. The next season is coming up.
Yeah, and we'll make sure to do that announcement. It's a lot of work to choose a season. It takes a few people. You have to decide and agree.
How big is your company of actors?
Well, it's not a company of actors. We're hired on outside. I was on the board, but I left to do film for a while, and I just happened to be cast in this show.
We have a board of directors of about 10 members, and then we have a lot of VIP members.
Okay.
And then a lot of advisors. But the core, I think, is probably about 10.
Mm-hmm. And how do you find actors? Do you just go get them?
Again, me new to Houston, I had to ask that. How do I get my actors?
Right.
And they have a website called Theaterport here, which I think the actors keep in touch with. Mm-hmm. This is how I met Chris and Heaven, was through, I put out a call there, and then they came and auditioned. So, and one thing I wanted to mention in the show, really super interesting, is I have three fine artists doing all original artwork. And we have a gallery at the theater, so they're going to be displaying all original artwork themed around Hedwig.
Wow.
So if you're a massive fan, you can come to the show and leave with a beautiful piece of artwork.
So it's auctioned off, or is it how did they...
I know they'll sell it.
They'll sell it direct.
And then proceeds will go to Unhinged, because we're a charitable company.
You're a nonprofit.
Yeah, that's right. But
great. Tell us again when the show opens and how long it runs.
The show opens on May the 8th, and it runs until the 30th every Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m.
And for more information, you can go to www.u-p.org. That's Unhinged website.
And the launch party is when?
The 30th, and it's going to be amazing.
The 30th of April, and...
Oh, yes, of April. That's important, isn't it?
Yes, it is. About 40 creative and artistic people throughout of the Houston artist community have been helping to put it on. It's going to be such a blast.
Yeah, this launch party.
I've seen, Facebook announcements and events, so...
Yeah, we are on Facebook. We're all over the place, so...
Are you on Twitter?
I am. You can Twitter me later.
I think we're debating going
there. Actually, we're actually Twittering as we speak. Queer
Voices. Are you?
Yeah.
All right.
Sounds so exciting.
Yeah, we're so technological.
Well, great. Thank you all for coming by, and we look forward to the show.
Well, we can't wait for you to come and see it, because it's going to be so much fun.
I'm excited.
Great. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Nori Mae Welby refuses to do something most people take for granted. She refuses to be categorized as either male or female. Born a boy, Nori grew up feeling more feminine, and as a youth, she dressed in women's clothes and identified as more female than male. The Sydney, Australia-based iconoclast now proudly calls herself a eunuch. Reporter Dira Sujan of Radio Netherlands talked to Nori recently, first asking her how she presents herself in public.
Generally very androgynously. Earlier today I was wearing a dress, but it falls flat on my chest and I look like a boy in a dress when I wear a dress. But I look like a pretty boy in a dress, that's okay. but I've got hair that's half shaved. I don't hide my masculine features, so they're part of who I am. And also I don't control my feminine way of moving, that's part of who I am. I find I'm very balanced. I'm about 60-40 feminine male. And I find that if I try to pass myself off as one thing or the other, I'm a fraud or I'm hiding something important. If I walk around as a normal woman and pretend I'm not a tranny, people get angry because they sense I'm hiding something or they feel they're being lied to. If I'm just open about it and say, yes, I'm a boy and a girl, then it becomes okay. Or at least I'm being honest about who I am, then they have to fit that into their worldview. And if they're unable to do that with ease, that can cause them problems, knee problems.
Do you prefer people to call you he or she?
Generally she, just because it's softer and we live in a society that's traditionally been male-dominated, and I like to rebel against that. And on balance, I'm a bit more femme than masculine, but it's a balance. I don't like the idea that someone would see me as other than them, as different to them, because essentially I'm a human being. That's all I know about myself. I don't know I'm a man or a woman, because that depends on people's definitions. I know I'm a human being. I know I'm the same kind of animal as every other human being.
Do you sometimes feel that people are feeling uncomfortable when they're in your presence, just because we are so conditioned to treating people as either male or female?
Sometimes people feel uncomfortable because they're frightened of offending. If I let them know there's no offense caused if they use the wrong pronoun, that it's okay for them to talk about whatever issues that they would have with gender and identity with me, then it becomes okay. 20 years ago, you couldn't be openly gay without someone thinking they had the right to hit you. When I go out on the street, the kids yell out and they call out tranny, or when I'm in public, someone might say very angrily, are you a man or a woman? Or what are you? They seem to think they've got the right to question my genitals when I'm in public buying a bottle of milk.
And how do you respond to that?
I usually don't comment, but I'm glad I shop locally where I know the people and I know I've got friends. I'm careful if I'm wandering beyond known places.
Why do you think people get angry sometimes when they're confronted with someone like you?
Because they have very fixed ideas about what it is to be a proper human being, and they think that means being a proper man and relating to other people as women, or being a proper woman and relating to other people as men, or whatever the case may be. And they sometimes don't know how to react to someone that's breaking that rule. They might have had a deep-seated yearning to jump outside the gender box all their life, and it makes them angry that they've given up so much and they can see someone that's breaching the boundaries, being happy, being the grasshopper when they've been hard-working ants, perhaps.
You were really young, Nori, when you made this big decision to have an operation, and Australia was also a very different place. Like you said, 20 years ago, you were in fear of your life. Why did you decide to do it?
Because it was the thing to do. There was a huge weight of pressure around me. If you were a tranny, you went on hormones, you had the sex change, you became a real woman, you disappeared into the suburbs. This was the only option. Why is there only one way to be a woman? Surely a woman with a penis is by definition a woman.
I think there's a lot of people who just would look quite puzzled at that remark.
If you're saying the person's a woman and you're saying they've got this attribute, they've got black skin, they've got white skin, they've got a sixth finger, they've had their ovaries removed or not, they might have been born with a penis. A woman with a penis is a woman with a penis. having an attribute that's labelled masculine doesn't mean you're not a woman. Being a woman's very much a social identity. We don't see people's privates in public, and yet we make assumptions about their privates. Surely your social identity is your social identity. If you're dressing like a woman, moving like a woman, talking like a woman, socially, you're a woman.
When you're faced with people who are angry with you, is it groups of people who are angry? Or, you know, does it happen on a one-on-one situation as well?
If it's group, it might be a group of youths or a group of kids, and I can usually sense it and move away from it, or not go through that area again. If it's individuals, usually the crowd's on my side. I was dancing at a pub in Sydney recently, and there was a guy on the dance floor that kept looking at me very angrily, and I tried to not engage him because I could tell he was identifying me with something that made him angry. And he tried to engage other people, and I saw him just talking to them and pointing at them, and I gather that he was trying to say, look at that freak, or what's that person doing here? And they were a cool crowd, and they were just, what's this guy's problem? They looked at me, they could see I was dancing happily, I wasn't causing any problem. And so the crowd reacted against this guy, and it was, I felt good noticing that shift and knowing I don't have to be threatened by people like that anymore. I'm really glad it's become mainstream and that my androgyny is less upsetting and more a model. I see more and more young people expressing themselves beyond the limits of what traditional male and female allowed.
I know you quite often refer to yourself as a eunuch. It's one of those terms that we're not particularly comfortable with, or we have many preconceptions of what a eunuch is. Why have you kind of reclaimed that word?
Because it's my biological gender, I guess, and it's also a short way of explaining my hormonal state. but I just like the way that it's sort of, it's not male or female. But human. In the Old Testament, I think, we're told that eunuchs aren't allowed into the temple. So it's something that's named in one of our major religions. And I think Jesus made a point of saying that eunuchs were welcome in the temple. So it's a point I make for people that think that sexual deviance are somehow ungodly, when we're all made by the same creator and part of the same universe.
You seem very confident and comfortable in your own identity. But I was wondering, if you had a chance to just rewrite history and go back to the DNA that was creating the future Nori in your mother's womb, if you could choose, would you choose to be what we would call a normal boy or a normal girl?
Absolutely not. I don't think anyone actually is that, because we're all individual human beings, and the more we try to live up to an idea of normal, if it's not true for us, then the less true we are to ourselves. And I acknowledge that if I had been born a hermaphrodite 47 years ago, my hermaphrodism would have been chopped out of me. I'd have been surgically operated on. They're still operating on intersex children to make them normal. So my ideal would be to be born a bit both, but also in a society that allows me to stay the way that nature made me.
But to go through life always having to have that sixth sense of looking around, making sure in your surroundings that there is no one there threatening you.
Anyone that lives a life out of the ordinary will find that. There's always a group of people that have a pack animal mentality and they want to attack anything out of the ordinary. So, yeah, there's an element of risk, but it makes for a life worth living.
Nori May Welby was interviewed by Dira Sujan of Radio Netherlands.
Have you checked our website for the latest This Way Out update? For a review of recent programming and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, just log on to www.thiswayout.org.
Dwight Eisenhower was president of the United States. I Love Lucy was the most watched show on the nascent medium called television. And in the late 1950s, if you wanted to read about lesbians, you either screwed up the courage to ask the librarian to see something she kept behind the counter, or you bought a pulp novel by Anne Welby, though that wasn't the name she used on her book covers. Our Steve Pride explains.
Anne Bannon is the pen name of the most popular writer of iconic lesbian pulp novels of the late 1950s and early 60s. Her six books were Odd Girl Out, I Am Woman, Women in the Shadows, Journey to a Woman, A Marriage, and Bebo Brinker. According to the Bloomsbury Guide to Women's Literature, Bannon's character, Bebo Brinker, has come to personify the 1950s Bar Butch and her ongoing search for true love. But the real life Anne Wilde was a wife and mother when she wrote these books. And take me back 50 plus years. How did Anne Wilde become Anne Bannon?
Well, it was clear to me and reinforced by my very nervous husband that there was no way I could put my actual name on the front of one of those wild and woolly paperback covers. It would end up for sure across the nearly bare bosom of a very seductive lady. And he said, I never want to see that. So I had to find a pen name. It was partly that, and it was partly the problem of sheer terror at being found out. So I went through all kinds of names, and finally one evening my husband had brought home a list of prospective customers. He was a salesman at the time. And on the list was the name Bannon. And I thought, gee, that's nice. And it puts me up at the front of the alphabet. So it had everything to recommend it. Plus, nobody knew who it was.
Did your husband read your books?
No, he's still living. He's in his late 80s. But he confessed to me about 3 or 4 months ago that he had read only one of them, and that was the first one, Odd Girl Out, and he didn't read it until decades after it had been published and republished by many different publishers. He did, on the other hand, read a few pages when I was writing it. Made him very nervous. But I won an Oscar for being a nice young housewife and mom, and that reassured him. I was very conventional outwardly. And he found it difficult to talk about. He didn't want to believe it. He assumed that I was just jumping on the same bandwagon with a few other women who were writing original pulp paperbacks at the time. And it was very successful. And when my royalty checks began to come in, he cheered up demonstrably.
So how did it all start? How did you become a writer?
I always wrote, and I think providentially at that time, I found on the bookstore shelves a paperback reprint of Radcliffe Hall's novel, The Well of Loneliness, which I found riveting and infuriating because it went from one gloomy crisis to the next, but at least it was a lesbian story and a very interesting one. And practically right next to it on the drugstore shelf was the first lesbian pulp original by an author named Vin Packer, and the book was called Spring Fire. And it was a college romance between two young women who were sorority sisters. And I thought, oh, Eureka, I just got out of college, I was in a sorority, I know about this too. So I sat down with my husband's old Remington portable at the dining room table, and I started telling the story as cautiously as I could. I ended up with almost 600 pages, mostly about a handsome young fellow who meets one of the two girls in the story, and they end up getting married and going off hand in hand. In the meantime, I wrote to the author of Spring Fire and said, rather portentously, I too have written a novel. And I don't know why she didn't throw my letter in the wastebasket at that very moment, but she got kind of intrigued and she wrote back. And the upshot was she invited me to New York. I was living in Philadelphia. And she said, if you can get up here, I will introduce you to my editor and you bring your manuscript and we'll see what he thinks. Well, it took me a while to talk Ward Cleaver into letting this happen, and he finally caved when I told him that I had found an all-women's hotel and that I would stay in the all-women's hotel. And he said, well, then that makes it okay, but you have to promise me you'll stay at the women's hotel. So I did. And I went up there. I met Vin Packer, who turned out to be a remarkable woman still writing. Her real name is Mary Jane Meeker. She's written as Anne Aldrich and M.E. Kerr and various other names. Absolutely brilliant and very interesting. And she took me over to the Gold Medal Books offices near Times Square and introduced me to Dick Carroll, who was the editor-in-chief. an old movie guy. He'd written film scripts. He'd been a film editor. And they brought him into Gold Medal to see if he could handle the new original paperback section. So he read the book as a courtesy to Mary Jane in just a couple of days, and I went in to meet him with my knees knocking, and he said very kindly, you know, this is not a good book, but he saw something in it. And what he saw were the two sorority girls of my story, Beth and Laura, whom I had carefully shunted off to a shadowy corner. And he said, bring those girls center stage. They are your story. And go home, rewrite the book. It should be half the length it is now, and tell the story of the two girls, which rocked me because I thought I had been so subtle that nobody would pick up on the fact that the girls were romantically interested in each other. So I went home, I cut the length of the book in half, I told the story of Beth and Laura, and brought it back with some terribly proper title like Same Time, Same Place, which had nothing to do with anything. And within a week, I heard back from Dick Carroll. He said, we love it, we're going to publish it. The title of the book is now Odd Girl Out.
And my secret love's no secret anymore.
Steve Pride continues his conversation with celebrated lesbian pulp paperback writer Ann Bannon.
So who was Beba Brinker?
Bebo was my fantasy butch, and I kind of dreamed her up based in part on a sorority sister who had the look, but not the emotional engagement.
Next time on This Way Out. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Donna Ann Ward, Christopher Gall, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Sherry Lunn, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Thanks also to Eric Beauchemin and Radio Netherlands reporter Vera Sujan. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is underwritten in part by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We all thank you for listening on WREK Atlanta, Georgia, Switch 1197 AM Brisbane, Queensland, Boise Community Radio, Boise, Idaho, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
We have a couple of announcements that we didn't get to get in the show this evening. Coming up this Wednesday on the 22nd, we have a GOBT Civil Rights Forum, which will be emceed by Monica Velasquez. This will be held at, I hope I got that right, be held at the Mecca Complex at 1900 Kane, which is in the 6th Ward. And then on the following Friday, the 24th, Monica will be doing a performance piece called Greetings from a Queer Senorita. That'll be 8 o'clock at the same facility, Mecca, 1900 Kane.
Yes, and we had to remind you again that on May 2nd, that's a Saturday, is the Houston Unity Banquet, and it'll be at the Sheridan Brook Hollow. They're at, let's see, that's 610 and 290, right there where it splits. And let's see, it'll be starts at 6:30 p.m. You can go to htuc.org and get your tickets.
And we definitely like to thank all of our guests tonight, the people from Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and also from the Pride Idol, and
Joey Guerra and Arnie Manus.
And, of course, our guest, Rose Wall from the Houston Transgender.
And the guest speaker, which will be Scott Turner Schofield.
And next week, we have Queer Music Heritage. And also, we're going to be talking about the HRC local dinner.
Gala, yes, coming up in May.
May 16th. The Hilton Americas downtown.
That's it. Again, this year.
Thank you.
And remind you that fundraising is coming up here on KPFT in May. So we're asking for your support.
Please call in. Thank you.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Walensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Walensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Buy a ticket for KPFT's 39th birthday car raffle. A 2005 Mercury Grand Marquis GS with only 20,000 actual miles on it could be yours for a mere $20. Your raffle ticket purchase will go towards supporting KPFT's programming, and if you win, it should be the cheapest vehicle purchase you'll ever make. You can buy tickets at KPFT's offices, 419 Lovett Boulevard in Montrose, weekdays between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m., or stop your favorite KPFT on-air personality or local station board member. They should have tickets. Raffle rules can be found at our website, kpft.org. If it's your style to put things off until the last minute, we'll be selling raffle tickets at the International Festival at our booth and also during the Art Car Parade on Saturday, May 9th. The drawing for this car will be held immediately after the Art Car Parade. You don't want to miss out on KPFT's 39th birthday car raffle. This is KPFT Houston.
Mark your calendar for the Houston International Festival, coming your way April 18th, 19th, 25th, and 26th. The 2009 festival will showcase Ireland and will feature performances by Los Lobos, Mavis Staples, Hugh Masekela, Ohio Players, Marsha Ball, Flaco Jimenez, Cherish the Ladies, and many, many more. Want more details? Go to ifest.org to see the complete schedule and purchase tickets. You can also sign up to volunteer for this fun-filled event at ifest.org. Don't miss the Houston International Festival April 18th, 19th, 25th, and 26th. Go to ifest.org and get your tickets today. This is KPFT Houston.
Starting May 23rd, there will be a festival celebrating Indian culture and yoga with a great spiritual master from India, His Divine Grace Sri Narayan Maharaj, the most elderly saint from India to ever visit the Western world. Lectures by Swamiji every day starting 5 p.m. on science of Bhakti Yoga and devotion, mantra meditation, and never seen before Krishna art. Delicious vegetarian feast will be served every day. The program starts from May 23rd through 29th at Durgabari Auditorium, 13944 Schiller Road, Houston. For more information, please call 281-499-3347 or visit www.bhakti.org.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.